Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again this week, I guess she's dancing her way from her sick bed to the microphone now. No, it's not Kimiko. It's Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Scott. Glad I made it on the other side of this COVID fun train to be here and do this podcast.
Yes. Listeners probably don't know this until like right now, but you are the latest or last of the STVD hosts and co-hosts to come down with the COVID, which is why we've delayed this by a day.
But how are you? By a day.
But you're feeling a little better today, right?
Yep, I'm on the better end of this, and you know, I did what I could to avoid it, but the swimming pool, it called me, and now I pay for it.
Well, you know, when you're by like a life-size petri dish, what do you expect to happen? See, the whole me not knowing how to swim comes in handy once.
There you go.
Don't know how
to swim. This is where it pays off.
Don't care for children. Oh, so many ways I'd avoid that. Wouldn't have a problem.
You've already X'd half of the risk factors right there.
Yeah. Just the way I X'd half of the kids I might have had. No, anyway. So. Alrighty, so we are here to talk about, once again, we're here to talk about The Boys, specifically the fifth episode of this third season, which was titled, had a doozy of a title, The Last Time to Look on This World of Lies. It was just one of many things to watch this past week. June, as I predicted back in March, when I looked at the schedule for television, you know, streaming and otherwise, you know, throughout April, May, and June, I was like, June's going to be a bit of a bitch.
A little bit.
I mean, I hate to complain about, oh, too much quality television, but it's just a matter of finding time, you know, just in general, forget podcasting, forget, you know, posting silly threads on Facebook like I do, whatever, for I don't know why. But it's just, I don't have the time to watch things. I get sleepy, you know? you know, we got The Boys, and then, you know, For All Mankind started, and it's amazing as we expected it would be. I haven't even touched the final season of Peaky Blinders. I've heard good things, but I haven't seen it yet. And then it's all the things I knew were coming. Like, when we released this podcast that you're listening to right now, hopefully, I believe the third season of Umbrella Academy will be dropping the same day. And I got to get Kimber on the line, see if he's going to want to do the podcast with me on that one or not, because I guess I kind of feel indebted to do that podcast since we covered the first two seasons in a pod. But then you get hit with a surprise show that you wasn't even on my radar. I mean, I have to go back and look, but I think on Facebook, when I listed all the different things that were premiering in April, May, and June, I think I might have missed this one, and it turns out to be one of my favorite things I've seen all year. That would be the new show on FX, FX and Hulu the next day, I guess. Unless it's the same day, I have no idea. The Old Man with, you know, which stars like Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow, and it's so good. But that I actually made a point of watching. I still haven't gotten back to Under the Banner of Heaven. I've seen one episode of it. I will get back to it, but it doesn't look like it's going to be that much fun. So, you know. Anyway. But I don't know why I'm rambling about all that, because we're here to talk about The Boys, so let's get to that.
There's just so much.
Yeah, I know. I just felt the need to let all that go. But we begin the episode. We begin with the aftermath of the mission that went to hell in the previous episode. So, you know, it's kind of like everybody's licking their wounds. You know, Kimiko, she's stable, but she's in need of professional medical care. You know, we see that Mother's Milk is watching videos of how the Russians apparently were experimenting on Soldier Boy. You know, quite torturous, but it looks as though some of what they were doing to him might have actually given him different powers that we saw manifest, like in that radioactive burst of energy that KO'd Kamiko in the previous episode. And then we go right from there to Mother's Milk and Butcher. I'm almost going to say it feels like it's a trope of the boys at this point, that these two always have to have decidedly different POVs, as I like to say. They're always in opposition to each other. If not every episode, every other episode.
Easily.
And, you know, it's always, you know, Mother's Milk is the, generally speaking, he's the rational one, and Butcher is Butcher. And by that, what I'm going to say now is I kind of blame Mother's Milk for this. Because as he would say himself, and he said about other things, even the last episode, he should know better. Because Butcher is just being the same uncaring asshole he's always been. Mother's Milk, it's like the Charlie Brown and the football kind of thing. You keep buying his line, and then why are you surprised when he does something? What are you really that surprised he's taking this temporary V for whatever? The guy has shown that he's the most Machiavellian of characters that I recall in any TV show or anything, quite frankly. Yeah, of course he's going to do that if he thinks he's going to be, if it'll help him get rid of the soups. Because he sees it as a temporary thing, so therefore he's not becoming a soup himself. At least I believe that's how Butcher is at this point rationalizing what he's doing.
Yeah, Butcher's gonna butcher, and he's never shown anything in his character that says otherwise. So yeah, bad read, MM.
Yeah, he should know better. No. Mm-mm, not so good. Anyway, that's so stupid. But my best jokes
are highlight of my week right there.
just came up with that one. So then, and speaking of Butcher, it kind of leads us to a moment, which is a little odd, but it's interesting because now it's going to be like, oh, we're going to be waiting to see what this is all about. Unless I've missed something, which is always possible because, you know, I'm if he's Butcher, I'm Scott. Because we see, you know, Huey is sick, right? He's got that after effects, like he just had a drinking binge. It's kind of similar in a weird way to the way Butcher was. When we saw him in that episode, he was kind of feeling sick the next day, whatever. But Butcher comes over to him while Huey's like pretty much bent over the sink, and he sees that flash of someone far younger in Huey's place. Now, I'm right that we don't know who or what that is. I didn't miss something, correct?
You know, if you missed something, then I did too, because I can't place it, and I don't know who or what.
Okay. Yeah, my assumption is, okay, this will be something that we're going to get. We're getting a little bit of something here, and it'll be explained later on. As you fully well know, where I'm concerned, I like that kind of storytelling. You know, because it's something you read, but that I wrote once anyway. So, why would I mention that on the podcast? So, we have all that in the beginning of the episode, and then we go from, I think we go from there to that boardroom meeting with Homelander and all the muckety mucks at Vought. How surprising is it that nobody got fried during that meeting? Were you not expecting that the entire time that scene was playing out?
Yeah, I figured somebody was going to be the example, but no. I think that maybe there was just too much talk about, you know, bottom lines and money and mergers and
confusing
for Homelander.
I love the twitchiness of it all and how he reacts, yes, specifically that one woman. I mean, it occurred to me early in the scene, it's like, okay, if he does kill somebody, and if he does, it's most likely would be with his heat vision or eye lasers or whatever he prefers to call it. It would also feel like they were kind of giving a nod to a number of Joker scenes in the Batman movies that always involve Joker coming into a room full of people who don't, you know, who don't quite know what's going on here, whatever, and he ends up killing off one of them. Nicholson did it in 1989. Heath Ledger did it in 2000. What was that year that movie came out? 2008, whatever. But they didn't go that route, which I actually appreciate because, again, that would have been a bit on the predictable side. So I'll give them credit for going in a different direction. One of the most ridiculous things we'd learn from that meeting is that there's someone new in charge of Vought's crime analytics division. It's the Deep.
Yeah. Great choices.
It occurs to me that it's funny that the character is probably the most shallow, dumb character of all the soups is named the Deep. basically, oh, look, how the fallen have gotten mighty on this show. You see what I did there. Then we see him going there with, and his wife, the thing with his wife, the creepy, yeah, creepy nature of that relationship, which we know, something bad is going to happen involving her. I'm just waiting for it.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Yes.
And I love that he brings cupcakes. Because it's so damn stupid.
It is an entirely appropriate thing to bring to start the job that you are absolutely not qualified in any way to lead.
And it's funny, if I'm not mistaken, I think at some point later in the episode, it might be, there might be a brief scene with Homelander on that talk show yet again, the Tucker Carlson wannabe show, whatever, where I think there's some references to cancel culture.
Yep. Yep.
And sure whatever. Is. And what is it that the Deep does is he pretty much, we find out later on, he pretty much gets rid of everybody who works there because he went through their tweets, and anyone who said anything negative or whatever in some way referencing Homelander, he whacked them. I mean, they lost their job. He didn't actually kill them. That would be what Homelander might do. But and I'm like, oh, so your boss is complaining about cancel culture, and essentially that's exactly what you just did to all these people. I believe the hypocrisy is deliberate, so I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, yeah. And also entirely on the nose.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, it, very much on brand.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So I know that – I'm trying to remember what else happens here. So I guess they do make it out of Russia. They're getting off the plane and, you know, that – I love how Butcher still thinks everything's going to be okay with him and Mother's Milk. And he's just like, yeah, pretty much, yeah, screw you. And he doesn't actually say screw you, whatever. And Huey reunites with Annie, and we have that whole little scene between them, which, again, it feels like we're – I don't mind it a lot, but there has been a slight tendency for I don't know what that was.
Yeah, that was weird. It's an angel, Scott.
All right, okay, this had to be something. There has been a slight repetition of scenes in the season so far. It's slight, so it doesn't bother me that much, but. And maybe after this episode, we won't have it as much. But, you know, it's like, okay, here's another scene where it's between Huey and Annie. It's like, okay, no more secrets. I'm not going to lie anymore. But, of course, then you lie, you know, whatever.
Everything's on the up and up. We're good.
Trying to think. But so that, I mean, it's pretty much there to build to what we're going to see later. Because, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, whenever you tell someone no secrets or, you know, everything, that means you're not going to. It's just that
there's definitely going to be secrets.
Yeah, it's TV 101. You know, all shows are built on secrets. And speaking of secrets, it seems like we see that Soldier Boy is going to secret himself onto a plane of some kind to come back to the States. So I guess he's going to be a stowaway or something. I figured that's how he gets back to the U.S. But before we go there, we have that scene between Butcher and Maeve.
Yeah. You know, what do you think about this? Like, what do you think of this pairing? Like, in this whole...
I hate to say that I saw it coming, because that wouldn't be exactly true. It's more like it didn't surprise me at all. Not that I was expecting. Yes. I'm not saying, oh, what, like earlier this season, I was like, oh, these two are going to get together. I wouldn't go that far. But, you know, as the scene played out, especially when he brought up the drinking, I mean, the minute he offered her a drink and she made the comment about being, you know, 4 months sober or whatever, or a year or whatever, and I was already like, okay, I know where this scene's going. And I see it. It's interesting that they're in most ways they're very different, but at the end of the day, they're both, number one, they're both very damaged people. They're both people who are carrying around a lot of guilt on their shoulders. But they're using that to fuel their anger, which is focused on Homelander, and rightfully so in both instances. It's perfectly reasonable that they would hate Homelander and would want to bring him down, whatever. So that it kind of, I think that kind of bonds these two together. By the way, speaking of paying homages or parodying anything from comic books, when Butcher puts a spin on the famous Spider-Man line, which you know, as anyone who's ever read or even seen a Spider-Man thing knows, it's "with great power comes great responsibility." When he says, "with great power comes the absolute certainty he'll turn into a right cunt," and I was like, going, "Oh, I don't know if that's what Stan Lee had in mind back in the early '60s," but at this point, all I'm thinking is like, "Okay, we know these two are going to get together." And I'm just wondering, okay, are we just going to smash the entire apartment because she's, you know, she is a superhero, she's got, you know, she's kind of strong. Is he in danger having sex with her? I don't know. I'm kind of curious. And wait, so she's like, bye? I'm always get confused because she was, I don't know. But yeah, so they hook up.
They certainly do.
Hey, I hate to say it because it feels like it's being facilitated by, you know, a lead male character or whatever. But anything that really helps to bring Maeve to be more central to the storyline, I'm in favor of. Only because I think there's a lot there that they can work with, and I'm very curious about her in a lot of ways. I kind of want to know more about her origins and her starting out, and I just find it fascinating.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've missed not having her there. I mean, It makes sense in the amount of time that we have in the story they're trying to tell, of course. But I do miss having her around, because last season, some of her stuff was, I don't know, some of my favorite. I really enjoy her. So I'd like to see how much further they can evolve her character, or how much further back we can get with her.
Right. Absolutely. So we kind of bounced from that to, well, we do now see Soldier Boy. He's made it to New York City. And he can see that it's a much different world than when he was last, you know, around civilization, which I guess was the mid-80s. It's very much a cheeky nod to Steve Rogers getting adjusted to a new world, although he had a 70-year gap with him. And, you know, he's dealing more with a 40-odd-year thing. But there are still things he's not used to seeing, whether it be people talking on phones, you know, or little Bluetooth things in their ears, or same-sex couples not really not having an issue.
Yeah, going. Yeah.
Although to be
honest, I loved his face when he walked by and he was like, "What the? Well, okay."
Yeah. Although I will say, on the coastline cities, that you would have seen that. I mean, New York City, there were gay couples walking together in the 80s, I'm just saying. But maybe it wasn't a New York guy, I don't know. But what does happen is that he ends up hearing a little Russian pop tune playing on a radio off on a truck or something. And apparently that's a song that must have been playing during one of his torture sessions. Because, of course, they were playing, you know, the Russian version of, you know, Aha or something. which essentially triggers those memories, which are not so good ones. And then we get a big old explosion in the middle of Midtown.
Yeah, like a little bit of a soup panic attack.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. All right, I'll go with that. So let's bounce over to, it's Mother's Milk. I guess he's coming to see the kid. And we have him talking to Todd. Remember I mentioned Todd is really too into Homelander's speech when we were watching that. So now we get to see how it all plays out. And when he sees like the lunchbox and the toys, and Todd is, you know, saying that, you know, the kid is, you know, a big fan of Homelander, and he's going on and on and on about him. And it's making for an unpleasant moment here. And part of me keeps thinking, I'm still having a problem believing that Mother's Milk's ex is hooking up with this guy. Cause I'm not seeing it. There's nothing about him that makes sense to me. I don't get it. Whatever. But there is, while he's there, there's a news report of that explosion in Midtown. And of course, Mother's Milk knows who's behind it, and that kind of triggers him. And we start getting flashes of stuff. It's kind of like, you know, Butcher having that quick flash of that kid by the sink. We get more extensive flashes of what happened with MM's dad. And, you know, it's too quick and brief to really put it together, you know, but at least picture is starting to form there.
Yeah, we're definitely starting to get some sort of idea of what's happening. And I like that we're getting this scene without going too deeply into it. I like that we're getting this scene of something that I think a lot of people experience in split families. You know, you have this guy who is your daughter's father figure at her home, you know, a stepdad situation. And thus far, everything we've seen with him, he seems to be a pretty likable, decent human being, and he has respect for him and trusts him. But kind of watching him really embody something that MM is just like, he knows the evil reality of it, and the struggle that would be to see his daughter have that, like, literal hero worship, and him trying to find a way to navigate that without, not like blowing its cover, I guess. Like, that's not what I'm looking for, but just like not allowing them to see the reality themselves, like the struggle that would be. So I was actually pretty glad that news report came on and he got out of there, because it felt just it felt really stressful and uncomfortable. And I know they're gonna push that further. And at some point, I feel it might create a rift for him and his daughter.
Right. Yeah, Nuri is definitely a high sensitivity factor with his daughter as far as anything regarding violence around her or anything else, which indicates of what clearly must have happened in the past. There's a lot more going on there, as we know. So, we'll with that news report, we also see that news report playing at I don't know what we call it, the headquarters of the Seven, where Vought Enterprises or Inc. or whatever the hell it's called is. And Annie is the only one who actually wants to do something, actually wants to deal with the problem. I mean, she knows who, or I think she, I don't know, wait, does she know at that point it's him or not yet?
I think she pretty much instantly knows.
I can't remember. Now, I thought for a second there that Homelander knew, and then I thought he didn't. Because I keep thinking he would have more of a reaction if he knew. So I'm going on the assumption that he doesn't yet know who that is, that it's Soldier Boy. Because I think it would just be that seems like it would be a much bigger revelation to someone like him.
Yeah. Yep.
But of course he's more when we have to do something about this. So he starts arranging all the Sunday talk show appearances. And you realize like, wow, Homelander has really gone corporate here. Or it's also, yeah, well, don't forget, Homelander doesn't fucking care. and they keep doing that thing with him where there's that buzzing in his ears. And that was,
that was
at one moment he's got the humming buzzing in his ears and he's looking at the footage. And that was that one second I thought, oh wait, does he suspect who it might be? Or maybe he does, but then he dismisses it because it doesn't seem likely because 40 something years have passed. I mean, I guess we'll know when we get to a later episode, but I'm not positive he doesn't at least suspect what it might be. Could be wrong. Hope I am, but we'll see.
Well, we know that is, you know, that's a cue, an auditory cue for us, you know, to get whatever emotion he's quietly having inside himself. Because we've seen him do it a few times this season whenever things are out of his control.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because I think we said on a previous podcast joking that it's like, wow, it's like they're taking that thing that they would do on Breaking Bad, like, you know, Walt White getting bad news in his ear, or Skyler, you know, being questioned. Same thing. Did Vince Gilligan write this scene? Anyway, so at the site of the explosion, we see a little convergence of Butcher, Huey, and Mother's Milk there, and they end up, you know, at least at this point, oh, look, they're back together again. Because, you know, unify for this problem that needs to be dealt with, which is, you know, kind of their fault to begin with, or at least it's Butcher's fault if no one else. And they figure out that, oh, they know where he's probably going, and they keep referring that he's probably going to see the Legend. So then we meet the Legend, and the Legend is Paul Reiser.
Of course it is.
Of course it is, because, you know, Paul Reiser needs to be on every major...
He is having a bang-up year.
Yeah. Bang a month and a half between Stranger Things and this. Jeez. Basically, he comes off a bit... He's a bit of a Robert Evans parody, if no one else. A little bit of a manager slash agent to the stars, or soup stars, I should say. Very funny, as we would expect the scene to play out. Not nearly as sleazy as I thought they were going to go with it, but then again, we have the next episode for that to be taken care of. We'll get there later. But we do find out that Soldier Boy was there for, number one, his costume, because apparently one of his uniforms must have been there for some reason, and also to get an address for his girlfriend, Crimson Countess. And according to the Legend, doesn't think it's going to be a happy reunion between the two of them. Which makes sense because, you know, kind of like when we were talking about that flashback scene, you know, an episode or two ago, I was thinking, if she's the one who told everyone this and the way it plays out, it feels like there's something else going on and she's in on it, because I think she's kind of lying here, which turned out to be exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So... Then we get another cool scene with the Queen, Maeve, and Homelander. It's nice to get our little, you know, anti-Superman and Wonder Woman scene here. And it shows the kind of the level of villainy for Homelander, because he seems to be really up on everything she's doing. And the fact that he can say he smells Butcher on her. And you know what? He probably does.
Mm-hmm.
Although I imagine Butcher smells like, you know, whiskey and puke anyway. But it's the end of the scene and how that goes, where all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, the Black Noir just kidnap her?
yep. Yep, they got her.
So my concern here, because and we have a scene a little bit later, I guess, with Annie going to Ashley about this, about, you know, what happened to her, and they're acting like she had gone to some sort of rehab or spa, but I think Annie knows it's all bullshit or something like that. But then Ashley kind of, you know, well, she seems like she's going to be like a normal person for a second there, and then all of a sudden she acts like the CEO. But it makes sense for her, because for all she knows, Homelander can hear her at any moment because, you know, super hearing. So, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of fear there. I thought it was a great scene to kind of get to see Ashley, to remember that she does know the danger that she's in, mm-hmm. I guess, and to just see a little spark of her humanity again for just a second, even though she doesn't bank on it, just as a reminder of she's in a really precarious place. she's pretty much screwed if she steps out of line.
Right. And it works for me and for probably a lot of viewers, because I don't really like Ashley very much, so I wouldn't mind something bad happening to her.
Yeah, she's definitely, she's not someone who they've spent a lot of time convincing us we need to love.
Yeah. So then the question becomes, what did they do at Maeve? Because now I am very, very, very curious about that, because if it's not, you know, I mean, especially, what do you do with someone who also you would need to figure out how to incapacitate because of her powers and abilities and whatnot? So I'm very curious what the situation is with her. So that's a kind of a little bit of a mystery. I'm going to looking forward to seeing how they deal with that. I mean, I don't think they can send her to that place where the guy with the giant penis was and all that other stuff. Remember, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay. Can't remember what that character's name was. He had a funny name. I can't think of what it is right now. Anyway, it'll come to me before the end of the podcast, or maybe you'll remember it. So anyway, I think we cut from there briefly to I think it's Butcher, Huey, and Mother's Milk opening the trunk, and that's where we had the whole conversation about them taking V again, and you realize that they're, well, whatever, they're both going to take it like we knew, because, you know, it's Soldier Boy, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Of course, yeah. So, I don't know if there's really much to say about that, because, again, it's kind of like, okay, here we're dealing with beats that we've already had. We already know the situation. We already know what Mother's Milk thinks about all this. We already know the situation with Butcher, and we know, unfortunately, Huey is a little more eager than he should be to take it. Especially since you just told Annie you weren't going to do this. You pretty much act like you weren't going to do it again. Well, you know, hey, look, you lied again. Look at that. Oh, don't worry. I just hit the microphone. There'll be bigger lies coming up for you, Huey. I think right now there's a couple supporting character subplots we can just tie off and deal with. So there's the A-Train one. Oh, by the way, there's a great line that Annie has with A-Train when she says to him, "Why are you so desperate to be with people who hate you?" I thought that was a very nice, precise summation of the A-Train, and it is very questionable why he does the things he does. Because he's constantly, every time you think, okay, he's going to try to break out of this and he's going to be a better person. And then it's like, nope. I want to do this thing. Like, oh, but now I'll go. But instead, let me go film this horrible, horrible commercial that pretty much mocks the entire concept of, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything else. Or I'll go, you know, rat out the guy on the other guy of the team so he'll just get murdered or whatever. So here, Ashley arranges an unexpectedly immediate sit down between A-Train and Blue Hawk. And it's interesting. I found it interesting the way they cast Blue Hawk. They didn't go quite as uber white as I thought they would have went with that character. But still, he does come off the way you'd expect that character to come off, considering what he's done with people in the black community there and whatever. So
they definitely were inspired, by a few police departments in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And kind of got the cliche big city cop kind of vibe for him.
So they arranged that apology, which is going to be, which A-Train just, for whatever reason, springs on his brother at the, I guess it's kind of like a community center kind of a situation. Yeah, it's not much of an apology at all. And once again, a plan turns into a rather violent shit show.
Yeah, and just like a word to a wise, I mean, any apology that is like, I'm sorry if you were offended, is just like, that's the worst way to start an apology.
Oh, yeah, well, it's already not an apology at that point. But
exactly.
I think we kind of knew that going into this because there was, he wasn't apologetic about any of this to begin with.
Nah, because he didn't, not at all.
He didn't see that he had done anything wrong from the start, even when he's having the conversation with A-Train, so why would this have even mattered? But unfortunately, when he kind of loses it and he starts throwing people around, you know, whatever, one of the people who gets, you know, hurt the worst turns out to be A-Train's brother. And we see him later on, he's actually at the hospital, his brother is, you know, his broken body is lying there in the bed and whatever. And we hear the doctor saying that he's never going to walk again. Now, and meanwhile, you have Blue Hawk on TV talking about and just spinning a ridiculous tale of how there were agitators and Antifa and thugs there and whatever, which sounded all too familiar, unfortunately, considering what we've gone through over the last few years. In real life.
Yes.
Now, if nothing else, if this incident doesn't push A-Train to do something, to be different, to make a change, I don't know what will. Although, it may just be, he may just find a way to kill Blue Hawk and not do anything beyond that. But at least, it'll be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, he's definitely had every single brushstroke of a coward thus far, so yes. It'd be great to see him step outside of that a little bit.
But at this point, because of his heart situation, he doesn't have any powers.
No.
Right, that's the situation. I can't remember if he doesn't have any powers, or if he uses his powers, he could kill him. It would kill him. I guess it's, you know.
I don't remember which it is. I just know that he's not able to use them for whatever.
Yeah, purpose. I think that's what it is. Because it's not like, because how would he would just lose
his right.
I think it's just, it puts too much of a strain on his heart. And if he did
it's that extra 5 pounds around his belt.
Yeah, it's well, you know.
That's what's done. It's those milkshakes.
Story of my life, man. So
it's always those 5 pounds.
And so it also turns out that the hospital where A-Train and his brother is, it's the same hospital where they brought Kimiko. Because we see, the camera scrolls up, you know, a couple floors, and that's where we see the two of them. So, to catch us up with what's going on with them, little Nina is not very happy about what happened in Moscow. I don't even think we even got a word of gratitude from her about, all the death by dildos. You know, because that's what she wants them to do. But, no. You know, she's all about, you killed some soldiers and you busted up the lab and it's all coming down on me and whatever. She's holding Frenchie accountable for it, even though it really wasn't his fault. But she's the one he's the one she knows. Therefore, it's her fault. His fault, excuse me. And so, once again, there has to be some sort of quid pro quo, a mission he has to accomplish in order to pay off a debt. And we see she wants him to kill two people. It's a father and his daughter.
It's a little kid.
Which is like, wow.
Yeah. Yep.
So Meanwhile, we also find out that Kimiko's powers are actually gone. So we can surmise that when Soldier Boy had his explosive moment there, one of the side effects of what he does is he takes away a Soup's powers. I don't know if he takes them onto himself or not, which is kind of a superhero kind of a thing. She's definitely lost him. I don't know if that means she'll never have powers ever again or not, but it also means you start realizing, oh, he'd be a really good weapon against somebody. Which is what I said at the beginning of the season. But getting back to the key scene, it's actually not the key scene, but it's the fun scene in the entire episode. You know, Frenchie's hanging out with Kimiko in the hospital room, and they're watching a Judy Garland musical. It's actually, just because I'm a movie guy, so I'll fill you guys in on it. It's actually, what they're watching is the 1943 musical Girl Crazy. It's one of those Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland movies. What's interesting is the specific number that they're watching, which is actually probably the most famous number from that movie and song, is I Got Rhythm, you know, for all the Gershwin fans out there. That specific scene was directed by Busby Berkeley. Busby Berkeley is probably the most famous director / choreographer of musicals from like the 20s and 30s. By 20s, I mean on Broadway, 30s, I mean on film, you know, like the Gold Diggers movies, whatever. So whenever you see these, if you ever see old clips of musical numbers where there's, you know, shot from above and there's all these elaborate, you know, choreographed things are forming shapes and people and all these chorus lines that seem to go on forever, whatever. That's all Busby Berkeley. That was what he was known for. He was kind of considered a genius in the field. He was hired as the director of this film. They filmed the scene that was the finale first. That was the first thing they filmed. And then he was fired right after that. Why he was fired, there are conflicting stories. Some people say it's because they were already just one scene in and they were already crazily over budget, so they wanted to bring someone else in. Some say Judy Garland, even though he had directed them before in at least one or two other, can't remember how many. I know at least one other Rooney Garland movie was directed by Busby Berkeley. But there was rumors that he didn't get along with Judy Garland. It might not be either of those. It's one of those Hollywood legend stories. What's the truth? Who knows? Everyone who was around back then is dead. So, so they're watching this, and then we have, it looks like Kimiko can speak, and then which becomes them having their own musical scene where they're doing.
Yeah, it gets all Dancer in the Dark up in there.
And it's quite lovely. And then we also realize that, much like that little musical moment we had, it just started pouring outside. I can hear the rain in my headphones. How nice. We realize that none of this happened. Of course. I mean, it would have been weird if it had happened. But there was a kiss shared between Frenchie and Kimiko. That did happen. So then Frenchie, he has to run out to get, you know, I think he's a little spooked by the whole situation. So he says he's going to go get some coffee. And maybe that really was what he was going to do. But unfortunately for him, he gets snatched by Little Nina's men. So this was just a delightful scene in the episode. I really enjoyed it. I'm assuming you did as well.
It's always so sweet when we get these two together. And as sweet as it is, and as much as we've touched on this a little bit, I there's just this underlying like sense of dread though I have, because we get all these just beautiful little sweet moments and there's a little romance starting, and it's just like, this can't go well for these two. Like, something awful's going to happen.
I don't disagree. Although one could say this has been building since the first or second episode of the show, because this has always been the situation between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been kind of like, it's one of those things where I'm watching, like, so are they a couple or not? And then I'm like, okay. So when the kiss actually happened, I realized, okay, they've pretty much been bonded, but it's been platonic until this moment is how I'm reading that. Which makes sense considering what she's gone through and everything. I keep thinking we're going to build to a moment, maybe it'll be this season, where Kimiko actually does speak. And, I don't know, maybe she screams.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll have the sonic scream I thought they were going to give that supersonic guy. I'm just saying. Look, she has a new power. Anyway.
There you go. He doesn't take powers. He doesn't absorb them. He doesn't steal or remove powers. He just swaps them. All right. Soldier Boy, the power swapper.
Not to be confused with Soldier Boy, who my phone seems to think I keep saying. Anyway, we go from there. We go to the Crimson Countess. And we know she's talking about chimps and famous monkeys, and we see, oh, look. We've got another surprise guest star cameo in the episode. And even without his beard, one can see that it's Seth Rogen, who is one of the people behind the show, actually. Really making his way in television as, you know, being the guy behind adapting, you know, really scandalous comic books into TV shows. Preacher, now this. Of course, he's not... I like thinking that he actually is Seth Rogen. I think it's Seth Rogen as Seth Rogen, even though he's really, even though he's, excuse me, he succumbs a lot, 779.
Because 778 was already taken.
I like to think there were already 778 other succumbs a lots. I know that's not quite how it works, but I like to believe it is. You know, just like there were 18 other COVIDs, you know? Anyway. I know that's not how it works. I know. And this is where my knowledge of porn and everything came in handy. Because it's like, oh, good Lord, Benoit balls. And I'm realizing, hey, you know, that might not be a term that a lot of people watching this might know. But you know it, Scott. Anyway. She's taking out the Benoit balls. He's lotioning up. And it's like, oh, I'm like, okay, I'm really fascinated to see how far they go with this, but of course, it doesn't go on that long, too long, because, you know, everybody else shows up to incapacitate her and so on. And I like that he continues about his business during
all. Yeah, no one's going to stop him. No one's going to tell him when he can come or can't. He succumbs a lot.
Exactly. At least, you know, he's probably done it 778 other times. No,
at least.
That makes no sense. All right, so we see that they have her chained up and her hands kind of like things on her hands to keep her from doing any of her conjuring spell-like abilities or whatever. And as we pretty much had said and we expected, she knew. She knew them Ivans had them all along.
She was onto it. She was a part of it.
Yeah. Hey, she's the Crimson Countess. She's red. Of course she's going to help the reds. That makes no sense. Anyway. Lame. Outside, Annie also shows up. So we get the requisite scene between Annie and Huey. And not understanding or believing him because he's a liar. And it's like, okay, we knew where this was going to go. But the Geiger counter is going off because we realize that that's how we tell that Soldier Boy must be getting close. I love that kind of gag. It always makes me think of, like, especially in a movie that has Paul Reiser in it, it always takes me back to Aliens when they have, like, the little meter thing. Whenever the alien gets closer, we start hearing the beep, beep, beep as it gets closer and closer.
Yep.
So it's very, kind of reminds me of that. But it's around this point, just as Soldier Boy actually does show up, we realize that Butcher has drugged Mother's Milk. Which we also should have...
with his avian water. You know, and that's the thing, too. You're not only getting drugged up in the middle of all of this, it's with this crappy bottled water. It wasn't even a good mixed drink.
And he should have seen it coming.
Yep. Yep. He should have seen it.
So, but we realize the reason why Butcher has done this is because he's going to try to make a deal with Soldier Boy. And he says something as he approaches him. And he says something which is a classic comic booky kind of thing. He's proposing a team up. And there's nothing we like better in comic books than team ups, because that's just fun. So, the rest of, and then we have like the way the rest of the episode plays out. So we can just talk about that from this point on. We have the confrontation between Soldier Boy and Crimson Countess, and we have, and how that goes, and then we have the rest of the conversation between Huey and Annie, and of course, how that goes. So we see two relationships, both possibly, well, one definitely, and one probably end. So, the scene between Soldier Boy and Crimson Countess, I was enjoying the whole thing where she basically was telling him that she never loved him and that everybody hated him, which is interesting because it's also kind of how everyone feels about Homelander also.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a really similar to the conversation or argument, I guess, that we had between Homelander and Maeve.
Right, exactly. And I was thinking about it because it's funny how Homelander is very much a takeoff on a DC character and one of the main DC characters, and Soldier Boy is very much a takeoff on a Marvel character and one of the main Marvel characters, and how in their own, even though they, in on the boys, they obviously all exist in the same quote-unquote universe, but in their own separate lives / universes, they are seen as not just the most powerful, but also the most hated among their own kind, much less everybody else. So I thought that was an interesting kind of parallel. So it almost makes a weird kind of sense that Butcher would use one to get rid of the other, and Homelander is the one he needs to get rid of, so he would try to use Soldier Boy for that. I'm hoping that we're going to get some interesting flashback stuff that there has been encounters between those two before. I'm really curious about that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And meanwhile, the stuff with Huey and Annie, I mean, was there going to be a doubt that Huey was going to again make a horrible decision and basically choose trying to go forward with his plan to get rid of Homelander over his relationship?
Oh, no, of course not. It's kind of a funny thing that he spends all of this time trying to take down these Supes and get rid of the idea that these people are heroes, and it's like the only thing he's so driven by his desire to be a hero himself. It makes sense that he would continuously use this power now that he can get his hands on it. But it's just a constant thing where she's like, I don't need you to save me. And all he wants to do is he's obsessed with the idea of being able to save her.
Right. It's as though, you know, he's never been the one to be the alpha male in his life.
Right.
And what's happened ever since his original girlfriend died, and what's gone on from this point on, is that he's been confronted with, you know, these incredibly exaggerated versions of masculinity and power by Supes, by a Homelander, by A-Train, and so on. And even Butcher, who might not have powers, but he's still, you know, compared to Huey, he's this massive, dominating type of character. And then Huey somehow manages to have a relationship with this lovely person who then also turns out to be But she wields a kind of power that he can't possibly fathom or have himself. So he's constantly aware of the fact that, and there have been a number of times where, you know, things go a certain way, and she has ended up, quote unquote, as he says it himself, saving him. It seems like he's always the one to be saved, and when he's actually heroic, it seems almost by chance and happenstance rather than any actual ability at the moment. So the fact that he plugs into this addiction, the addictive qualities of this drug, which gives him powers, and it's finally him being able to take charge, to take control. Again, it always comes back to people needing the semblance of control. Homelander is all about that. This is something he can use. Even if he can't fight Homelander himself, at least he has a chance to stand up to him and then maybe zip away from him before Homelander can murder him, I guess. I don't know. Although the whole naked thing makes it kind of complicated. Oh, man. But, so it's almost a soap operatic quality where you have a couple that's like, oh, they're together. Oh, they're apart. Oh, they're together. Oh, they're apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if anyone out there who listens, if any of you remember the old soap opera, All My Children, they're Tad and Dixie. Tad and Dixie, they're together. They're apart. They're together. They're apart. Oh, but they should be together. Okay. Oh, they should be apart. It's going to happen all over again. But it's an episode where there's a lot going on in this episode.
Yeah, it's like every single character is now getting their own subplot.
But it's at least with this show, there's not one storyline that's ever boring.
Oh no.
I mean the A-Train stuff I found compelling, surprisingly. You know, because it's like, okay, I want to see where they go with this, because this is them kind of taking on a thing that's been, you know, more and more talked about, you know, in the news over the last few years than even before, and rightfully so. And I'm curious where they'll go with this. The deep stuff, the deep is kind of like there for comic relief, which only makes me think, okay, but at a certain point, it's going to be like horrific. I just feel that's where they always end going with the deep.
Right.
I'm very curious what happened to Maeve and where they actually took her. As well as all the other things. And, you know, are we going to get back to Stan Edgar and how he's dealing with all this? Or have we permanently sidelined them with legal issues? We still also got to get back to, Newman, you know, and where they're going to go with all that, because I'm expecting we're going to see some more heads popping before this season of television is over. It's a frenetic, crazy episode. I would love to give you an explanation for what the title meant. I don't know. I did Google it, and I didn't see anything in my initial search for that if it was quoting something. So I'm sure I just missed it. And maybe if I had spent more than like 2 minutes looking, maybe I would have found it. I apologize. I probably should have looked. Maybe I'll look it up and I'll come back to the next podcast. I'll say what it was about. And then we have what the next episode's going to be. Now, I had made reference to this episode, I think, when we did our first one a few weeks back.
Yep.
Because I mentioned there's only one they're only giving us the title to one episode this season, and it's episode number 6. And I know what that word means.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what happened. This much I do know. I don't know a lot from the Boys comics, but I know certain things. I've read a little bit, not that much, so I wouldn't call myself an expert on it by any stretch of the imagination. But I knew about this. I love the idea that they were trying to get the approval. I thought they had gotten it approved, but I'm glad I discovered earlier today. Oh, no. Twitter said no. That they had asked for, I guess you have to request when you want a specialty emoji done, for Twitter, and they had come up with one which was the apparently it was an eggplant, and I have no idea what the eggplant emoji people can use that for, because I don't, who eats eggplant? An eggplant parmesan? I don't understand why people use eggplants. I see it all the time. It was the eggplant with a cape on it. And I was like, huh, I wonder what that means.
Oh, yeah, man. There's going to be, now, have you, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but Seth Rogen has posted a warning.
Yes.
About Herogasm. Did you read his warning?
That very long warning with the uses words like about penetration and.
Well, let's see here. Just a rundown. This episode depicts a massive soup orgy. Airborne penetration, dildo-based maiming, extra strength lube, icicle phalluses, and cursing. It is not suitable for any audience.
Yeah.
There it is.
You've been warned. There's been a lot of talk about it and how they were gonna be able to depict this on, I mean, you know, on one hand, you know, obviously this isn't broadcast network TV. It's not basic cable. If they give them the go ahead, Amazon can pretty much let them have practically free reign. I'm curious how far they can go. So I will say if anyone had an issue with that they saw a dick or two in the first episode, it's like, yeah, I got some news for you. you may see a little bit more. You may see a little bit more than that in this upcoming one.
Yeah, I think there's a good possibility.
Emphasis on the phrase upcoming one. So I hate myself sometimes. No, it was I that one I might try to watch pretty quickly.
No, don't pause it. Don't pause it and think about it. Just pile through.
Oh no, I mean like, wait, it's 3 a.m. Is it on now? Okay, I'm putting it on.
We gotta go check it out.
I don't think I wanna wait. I didn't get to watch this one because this premiered on Friday. They premiered on Fridays. I don't think I was able to watch this one until Sunday.
Oh man, yeah.
I am not waiting till Sunday for the next one. I'm not saying it's going to be a great episode. It might be. I just need to see how they do it. I'm just very curious.
Well, we knew that. We've known that this episode was in the works for, well, like a good year or so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to see. I got to. Oh, I might not want to, but I got to see.
When I was first reading about season 3 and Soldier Boy being brought into it, and we knew all about that, way back when, you're right, there was reference to Hero, they would be doing Herogasm, and I was like, and I remember reading, I was like, wait a minute, I think I actually know what that, I think I remember hearing about that like years ago. And I was like, wait, and I actually got a hold of a comic, and I was like, oh wow. Whoa, are they gonna do this? Really? I guess they could. Why not? Hey, if Doom Patrol can have ghost sex, why can't they have this? I don't know if you've seen Doom Patrol yet, but there's a thing with ghosts having sex all the time in the background. Anyway. Alrighty then. Anything else? I know this was a bit more recap heavy and not as conversational, but you know, what are you gonna do? You've been sick, so I was trying not to overtax you there.
I appreciate you. Yeah, I don't really have anything else. I really liked this episode. I liked the beats we got. Even if some of them were just a little bit of a yep, okay, we've got this. There's lies and, you know, there's a repeated theme here, but we need it. We can't have Huey be in, you know, happy, cordial life, because then he's what? Then he's just going to, what, do nothing? So let's push him. Let's see where it goes and get through next week's episode.
I mean, it's funny, I'm watching a show like The Boys and Jack Quaid's the main character, Huey, and Then I flip over to being the geek that I am. There's I'm more of a DC guy, even though I do love Marvel as well. At least, you know, their movie output and whatever. And some of y'all may be aware of the ongoing chaos that's going on behind the scenes of the upcoming Flash movie, due to Ezra Miller being apparently a psychopath, I guess, or something. He's just a. I don't know if you're. I don't know if you've read about anything about this.
I haven't. Not.
Google it, because I don't want to get into it. But he's there's something very wrong, I guess, with Ezra Miller, and he's been doing things where he's been. It's like super weird and creepy, like really bad. And Warner Brothers kind of has themselves in a bit of a quandary here, because if they had hardly filmed any of the movie, or hadn't filmed it, or only filmed a part of it, it would be like, okay, let's just get rid of him. We'll recast and we'll reshoot a few things. But I think they've pretty much shot the movie. I think it's all post-production at this point, which takes a long time because of all the, you know. So there's a lot of people who are clamoring, you know, that they don't want him and remove him. It's like, I don't think they can do that. They can't junk it. That's literally like, that would be like wasting like over $100 or $200 million. Plus, you can't just reach, because you can't ask everyone who's involved in it. It's like, okay, can you all come back and reshoot all these scenes with us again? You know, hey, Michael Keaton, can you come back? Hey, Affleck, can you come back? So I don't know. No one knows what they're going to do. How are you going to promote this if this guy is just, you know, a fucking nutcase?
Interesting.
It's funny because there have been things about this movie that have been going on for a while. Like, oh, it's been delayed for years now. It's like, well, and I was like, okay, that's a little exaggerated. It was announced at a certain point. You know, there was this thing called COVID that happened, which obviously impacted all things, especially this movie, whatever. So it's been delayed a few times as far as the release date being pushed forward. But it's a big movie, which is going to have a lot of special effects and all the other kind of crap. It's not that shocking. But now they got to deal with this. And when people were starting to suggest how they could recast the part, other than, you know, saying Grant Gustin, because he's on the Flash TV show, although I don't know if they would never use the same actor from a TV show for the movie. They just wouldn't do it. Jack Quaid was actually one of the people that were mentioned, because they seem to have this, for some reason, everyone's version of Barry Allen now has to be this, you know, a thin, gawky, fairly young guy. Even though it's like, it's interesting, because for the first, I don't know, 35, 40 years of Barry Allen, that's not how he was ever depicted. But you know what? He was kind of a bore, so maybe I shouldn't complain about it. So I'm watching Huey or Jack Quaid here, and I was like, yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I can see it.
And the fact that his ability that he has on the show right now, it's not exactly super speed, but it's sort of kind of, it's more teleporting.
Yeah.
But it's in that neighborhood kind of thing. And I was thinking, huh, could he be the, maybe they can just do really extensive deep fake, effects and just basically CGI his face everywhere.
Ooh, over there you go.
Cause that won't look weird at all, I'm sure. Anyway, it's just, for some reason that was in my head because the show is making me think of it between A-Train and Huey. Anyway. All right. I'll stop talking. If you enjoy this podcast, I don't know if you did. If you did, you know, kudos to you, man. You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's a Serious TV Drama podcast page. Like the page, you can join the conversation about shows like The Boys and so many others, especially Better Call Saul. We're a big fan of that there. I read something cool. Oh, do you realize there's rumors that maybe Walt and Jesse might be in it a lot more than we think?
Yeah, I've seen all sorts of fun bits of information.
That's very interesting. I think they're all just screwing with us. Anyway, if somehow in the future you forget how you found this podcast, you know, there's a lot of other places you can find it. Yeah. No, I just realized, I know I've been making fun of this every time I do it now because it keeps occurring to me. Why am I telling you where to find our podcast if you're already listening to our podcast? It's like when you're watching, you ever watch a TV show and during the show, there are, I'm not talking about the end. I'm talking about during the, like, you know, 15 minutes in, if you're watching, like AMC and this commercial, so there's commercials on it. And there's a commercial for the show that you're watching.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird.
Why are you promoting? You know, that doesn't make any sense.
Like, we're already here, Phil.
Yeah, thank you. But anyway, guess what? You can find our podcast lots of places. You know, Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music. I don't know if anyone actually goes to Amazon. You know what? They go to Amazon for everything. I'm sure they go there, you know, except for porn. That's the next thing. Bezos, get on that. And that's Spotify. I guess, you know, whatever. Anyway. Or you can go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com, where you can find all 348 of our podcasts.
That's where I find us.
That means 350 is coming up soon, and there won't be anything special about that one. Ah, that's too bad. Oh, well. Anyway, just occurred to me. What else do I usually do here? Oh, Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on Instagram, Serious TV Drama, all as one word. And of course, you can find us on Twitter. It's at STVD Podcast. I recently vehemently disagreed with something Alan Sepinwall said under our STVD podcasting, so probably pissed him off. I said, you're wrong, sir. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Anyway, again, STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Jamie, thank you for, you know, being able to record through your recovery.
Yeah, thank modern medicine, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. COVID.
Sure is.
It's a thing, man.
All the cool kids are doing it.
We've all, hey, like I said at the top, we've all gotten it at some point. And it's interesting how we've all had very different, we've all suffered in different ways and to different extents.
Yeah, it's a tailored virus, let me tell you.
I'm amazed because, you know, I figure I'm the whiniest of the bunch, and yet mine, I think I got one of the more mild strains, so yay for me. So we will be back next week to talk about, we'll be talking about HeroGasm.
That's going to happen.
I might have to get some sound bites to add to that podcast, or sound moans, maybe. At some point this month, I will also probably see about getting a podcast done on the third season of Umbrella Academy that will be coming. I don't know when it'll be, but it'll be this month, because July, it can't wait till July. July's going to be a problem, so it has to be this month. I have not figured out how we're going to handle the final episode of this and the premiere episode of Better Call Saul, which are just a couple days apart. I think I know how, but we'll talk about it in July. Anyway, Jamie, thank you so much again. Thank you guys out there for listening. That's about it. I will let the formerly sick girl have the last word before I press the big, fat, shiny red button. So go for it, Jamie.
Wear your mask, wash your hands, have a good night.